I want you to go to 2 Timothy chapter 2. And I have to tell you this. I am going to contend with you tonight. Say, what is that? That means that, you know what contention is when you ever have, you say something and somebody's always got to go, oh, you're not right there. That you're wrong. Kathy says it every day. Oh, no, anyway, really. And I, believe it or not, I am not a contentious person. I am not. I don't start arguments. I don't look to start arguments. I don't like arguments. I just rather fight. But I am going to contend with you on something that you may or may have said. Okay? Now, here's what I'm going to say. If you, you know, it's easy. This is a real easy one. If I ask you tonight, are you saved? Put up your hand. That's going to be pretty easy. Right? This next one, I am not sure that everybody that puts up their hand should. But if I say, how many of you love the Lord? Well, you're not going to go, nah. I mean, if you don't love him, you're going to be smart enough to go, well, I'll fake it. Because here's how people think they love the Lord. I didn't do anything bad to him today, so I must love him. Now, that is not the definition of love. I didn't punch Bill Clinton in the mouth today. Don't mistake that for love. He was never got within an arm's length of me. So if I ask you tonight, are you saved? Put up your hand. I'm not gonna try to prove that you're not really saved. And if I ask you, do you love the Lord? And you put up your hand. I am not going to try to prove to you that you misstated that. But there is something that we're too quick to put our hand up on. And at the end of this message, either you're going to put it up and mean it. Not here. You're not in here. But if it's ever asked again, you're either going to really put that hand up and mean it, or you better be smart enough not to put it up. And I want you to look here. It says this in 2 Timothy chapter 2. Verse 1, it says this, now therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who should be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, they may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. And if a man also strive for masteries, yet he is not crowned, except he strive lawfully. Let's bow our heads. Father, it's so good to talk to you. Lord, I like our president. I really do. But I couldn't get in to talk to him tonight. I couldn't get in to talk to him next month or a year from now. I don't know if I could go back to Boise and talk to the governor if I wanted to. But we can talk to you, the creator of the universe, the giver of life, at the speed of thought. Man, that's amazing. You are amazing. Every benefit that we have is because of you. You just wanted to be nice. You want to be beyond nice, God. You are good. We're only good because people make us be good. If you want to be bad, there's nobody could make you be good. So we thank you for being so good. God, these folks came again. They came tonight because they want something from you. And they want something from your book. Please don't let me be the reason they don't get it. Please get Sam Gipp out of their way, out of your way. And speak to the heart of each individual that is here that they might be edified by the end of the message, that they being edified, they would leave here and live to your glory. It is in Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. Now the question... If I ask you, are you saved, put up your hand, I'm not going to argue with you. If I say you love the Lord, you put up your hand, I'm not going to argue with you. Here's the one. And don't put your hand up, by the way. I'm just saying this. How many are soldiers for Christ? Oh, man, people put their hands up. Yeah, I am. That's the one I'm going to contend with you about tonight, okay? I just don't believe it. I don't say I doubt it. I don't believe it. But I am not going to prove to you that you are misstating your case, or I'm not going to try to argue with you. Here's what I'm going to say. If you are a soldier for the Lord, I'm going to ask you some questions. You should have the answers. Okay? You should have the answers. Now, to explain this, I got to tell you a little bit. I gave you a testimony, and I told you about stealing those cars when I was 16 years old. I got to tell you, 16, 17, 18, 19, those 4 years of my life, not the whole years, don't worry. But when I was 16, I told you we stole two new Comet Cyclone GTs. off the Mercury dealer, and I got arrested, and I was sentenced to 6 months in Mansfield Reformatory. But because that was the first time I was arrested for Grand Theft Auto, I had some other arrests, but this was the first felony. The judge said, instead of going to 6 months to Mansfield, I'm going to put you on probation for 2 years. But any time during this 2 years, you violate your probation, it's Mansfield. So that's when I was 16. And guys, that didn't change me. I still stole cars and still did rotten things. And my probation officer knew it. He knew it. I'm in reporting to him one day, and he said this. He said, Gip, he said, I am going to catch you jaywalking. And he said, you're going to Mansfield. I mean, he had me in his crosshairs. So that's when I was 16. When I was 17 years old one night, me and my best friend were out in my car. 3 o'clock in the morning, we were drunk. And the road made out. It was one of those 90-degree turns. And I put my car in a ditch. Now, I didn't say I put my car in a ditch. You know what you put in a ditch? You put a tire in a ditch. Do you know what you put in a ditch? The whole car. How about 1957 Chevy Bel Air? That ditch was so deep, you couldn't see the top of the car. It was in this ditch. When they pulled it out of there, the only thing straight was the top and the trunk. Totaled that 57 Chevy. Well, we were drunk. And I'm 17, and I still got another year of probation, and my probation officer wants to put me in Mansfield. So I thought, man, I got to do something. And so the state patrol showed up, and they said, what happened? I said, I passed out. I told them I passed out. So I can still remember I'm having this conversation. I'm sitting in this cruiser with this Ohio State patrolman. He's being very nice. He says, how old are you, Sam? I said, 17. He said, do you know that in the state of Ohio, it's against the law to drink before you're 17? I said, oh, yes, sir. He said, have you been drinking tonight? I said, oh, no, sir. And so then we talked a little while longer, and then he says, how old are you, Sam? And I thought, how sad to see it strike right beside you. Alzheimer. Whack! And I said, 17. He said, do you know that in the state of Ohio, it's against the law to drink before you're 18, when you're 17? I said, yes, sir. He said, you've been drinking tonight? I said, no, sir. And he just exploded. And he said, well, you must have been, because it ain't been me. And I looked over and said, well, it must have been you, because it ain't been me. You see, you said that. I did. And I don't know if it was the audacity or what, but he didn't haul me off to jail. And so that was when I was 17. Now, I don't know if you know this. I can't do this. I can't do that to my head, okay? But if you just do that to your forehead, anytime in the next 60 days, if you have a brainwave, it's going to show up kind of screwy. They'll think you're a Democrat. And I'd just been a car wreck. And my doctor, who was the same doctor that 5 years later overlooked my broken neck. Anyway, he did a brainwave. And it came back. He said, the brainwave shows there's something wrong. I think you're a petite mal epileptic. Well, I'll tell you something, guys. I'll be anything you want me to be as long as I'm not going to Mansfield. All right, when I was 18, and some of you guys are right in this area, you remember the draft? And before they did away with the draft, for 1 or 2, maybe 3 years, I don't think they did more than 3 years, they had the lottery system. And the lottery system was, they broke it into threes, thirds, and if you're in the first third, just join up, pal, you're gone. If you're in the second third, you're probably going to get drafted. And if you're in the third third, get a day job, because you're not going to get drafted. And I was in the second third, so I thought, okay, I'm 18 years old, Vietnam was at its peak, I'm going to get drafted, and I'm going to go to Vietnam. Whole 18th year, I didn't get drafted, never heard from him. So when I was 19 years old, I went into the Marine recruiter, and honest, this is what I said. I walked up to the counter where he's standing there. I said, I want to join the Marines, I want to go to Vietnam, I want to kill people. Now, I would think that'd make a Marine happy. It did. He was happy. I mean, that's what they were looking for. So he starts filling out these forms, and he's holding my draft card in his hand, and he goes, He said, I can't recruit you. I said, why not? Now, you guys know what 4A means? That means you're okay for military service. And 4F means that you're not. I was neither one. He said, because your classification, and I knew it wasn't 4F. I said, well, what is it? He said, it's 1Y. I said, what does that mean? He said, You can join the military in a declared war or a national emergency. Well, guys, he said, Vietnam is not a declared war, and it's not a national emergency. I can't take in. Now, what I'm telling you guys is this. I tried to join the Marine Corps in 1969 when I was 19 years old. Do you know what that means? Nothing. You think I, my son, my oldest son was a Marine. And you think I walk up to a Marine and go, I tried to join. You think he's going to ask me to sign his arm or something? Really? You tried to get in? Wow. That doesn't mean anything to him. All right, so here's the thing. If you are a soldier for the Lord, when did you enlist? How many here, by an uplifted hand, will say, I either was or am presently in some branch of the American of the United States military? Anybody? Okay, what were you in, brother? Navy. The Navy. Let me tell you, he was telling me last night how he got in the Navy. He said he went to bed, he always liked the Navy, he wasn't against the Navy. And one night he went to bed and he woke up in a Navy uniform and he saw in a sailor's uniform and thought, oh, I must be in the Navy. You know that's not. You know, I've never found anybody that was in the military that didn't know exactly how they got in. They all remember the day they went in, whether it was, your friends and neighbors, you got drafted. But I never met a guy that didn't know how he got in the military. Well, how did you get in the Lord's service if you didn't join? You didn't get sucked in by osmosis. You know that? You know, I've had people say this. They'll go, I went to Bible college. And they'll go, I almost went to Bible college. And I want to say, so? I mean, look, somebody goes to Bible college and you learn 3 years of Bible. Somebody wants to go but doesn't go, does that automatically I credit them with a 3-year education? No. And I hear people all the time saying, well, I was going to go to Bible college. You know what? Look, if you're in the Lord's service, there ought to be a day when you remember saying, I went in. I can remember when I tried to get into the military. And because I got such a vivid memory of that, I know I was never in. I don't ever do that. I don't ever try to act like I was in the military. I saw some guy, it's amazing how many 24-year-old Vietnam veterans we have out there now. But this guy is standing in his army uniform and he's, begging for food and money or whatever. And some guy walks up to him and says, are you in the army? Yeah. He looks at his insignia and says, you were in such company. He goes, yeah. He goes, huh? He said, so if you were, how come you got your patch on the wrong arm? And he said, I don't know if you know this. I did not know this because I wasn't in the military. The guys who are in the military know what I'm about to tell you. When you see guys with medals, there's an order to the medals. And he says, if you won those medals, how come you got them in the wrong order? And all of a sudden, this guy, he kind of felt like he needed to go home. And this guy, he is following him. He said, you get that uniform off. Don't you ever put it on again. You know what they call it? They call it stolen valor. There's people in this room that went and joined the military and may have died. Do you understand? And then you and I are going to try to pretend that we were in too. You know why? Because we want the valor, but we didn't want the threat. I didn't want to put it all on the line. I'm going to tell you this, guys. I resent Christians who just flippantly, you in the Lord's service? Yeah, I'm in the Lord's service. What do you do? When'd you get in? How did you get in? I will tell you what happened. I got saved. I told you 10 weeks after I got saved, I'm in Bible college. And I can still remember this. I can't remember who it was that was preaching. There was a visiting evangelist, and I believe it's in my first Bible, which I still have. And in one of the flyleaf pages, I got it down. I think it's January 21st, 1971. That at the end of that service, I left my pew. Now, I was already saved. I came down. I got on my knees. You know what I did that night? I've been to the altar for a lot of stuff. But that night is the night I joined the Lord's army. You know how bad I wanted to get in? I got on my knees to ask that I could join. I got on my knees and I said, Lord, I want to be in your service. See, I remember the day I tried to get into the military and I didn't get in. I remember the day I joined the army for the Lord. And again, you can say what you want about me, but I know I am a soldier for Jesus Christ. And if you have taken it on the chin, and you've done battle with God's enemies, you resent somebody who stays in their air-conditioned house and plays, you know, their big challenge is fantasy football. I hear men talk, I drafted Tom Brady. You didn't draft Tom Brady. You know what fantasy football is for? That's for guys who couldn't hit the beach with a boat. And they think they're a professional coach. Yeah, Tom Brady's on my team. You don't have a team. Your team is as real as your military service for the Lord. There must be somebody playing fantasy football here. I hope this has no effect on my offering, man. You know, I didn't really mean what I just said. Some years ago, somebody... you know, I feel like if I just keep kicking, it's like treading quicksand. The harder you kick, the faster you sink. Some years ago, somebody came up to me and gave me a letter opener. You know what that letter opener was? It was a miniature M1 bayonet. That's the coolest letter opener. I like that letter opener. I don't have that letter opener anymore. I gave it away. I love that letter opener, but I gave it away. Because before they gave it to me, they could have just given it to me and it had been all right. I still have it. But before they gave it to me, they had something engraved on it. And when they gave it to me, they said, you know, you put me in mind of a Marine. I don't care what I put you in mind of. I never was. Right. You don't have to say amen real loudly. Don't. Anyway, on the blade of this letter opener, they had United States Marine Corps. And every time I'd open a letter, I'd pick it up and I'd read United States Marine Corps and I'd think, I got no business with this. I have a pastor friend. Yeah, he was in the military. He was in the Marines. I took it to him. Gave it to him right out of the fifth rib. But but no, really, I said, brother, I said, somebody gave me this. And I said, I was not in the Marine Corps. And I said, I want somebody who was in the Marine Corps to have that letter open. I talked to you about the Fight On books. If you look at the front, both those books, the introduction, the guy that asked me, he asked me if he could write the introduction. He's a saved man. He's with the Lord now. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Special Forces in Vietnam, Green Beret. And believe it or not, he liked me. But he's dead, so now people mistreat me. But and he gave me a baseball hat. You know how you see an officer and they got the black bill of their cover and it's got all that, they call it scrambled eggs. Give me this black baseball hat and all this gold scrambled eggs. And right across the front it said, combat infantryman. That hat, I thanked him for it. It was an honor. That hat never, ever went on this head. If I put that hat on my head, it is an insult to everybody who was ever a combat infantryman. And I carried that hat around for years because you can find a lot of guys that have been in the military, but they're not combat troop. And I finally found a guy who was a combat infantryman. I said, here, this is yours. I said, I got no business having this hat. I'm just not doing it. And so guys, what I'm telling you is, if you're in the military for the Lord, you ought to remember when you got in. My second question tonight is this. If you're in the Lord's army, who's your enemy? You know, in the Second World War, it was easy to tell who the enemy was. They were either speaking German or speaking Japanese. And, you know, you go out there, you got to find out who the enemy is. You know what I find out with most Christians? Most Christians, their enemy usually is another Christian. I contend this is true. If there was a Christian who is mad at a preacher, and he's downtown, and he's got a gun, and he's got one bullet, and he sees that preacher, and he sees the devil. I mean, the cause of all grief, all sin in this world, and he can eliminate evil with one bullet. And before he shoots the devil, he sees a preacher doesn't like, I'm going to tell you, the devil will get a pass that day every time. I've seen people leave churches and talk about the pastor that they want at one time said that they loved, and they don't have as much hatred, but they don't say the bad things about the devil they'll say about the preacher that they have. I want you to know something. Your enemy is not bought by the blood of Jesus Christ. And if you think they are, you better check yours. But the fact is, guys, there ought to be somebody. You say, well, how do I know who my enemy is? Who do you want to hurt? Now, if you just said this, oh, I don't want to hurt anybody. No, think about that concept. This is, you're in a foxhole. You've got your weapon. You're in a foxhole with another soldier. And they come in and say, the enemy is going to attack within a half an hour. Be ready. They're going to be coming across no man's land, and they're going to be trying to take this position. Brother, you've got your clips laying out. You've got your enemy off safe. You've got one chambered. And you look over the guy next to you, you go, man, they'll be coming any time now. You got about another 20 minutes. You ready to kill him? The guy goes, oh, I don't want to hurt anybody. Why did you join the army? I want to go to cook school. They'll pay for my college. You know what I'd say? I wouldn't shoot him. I wouldn't shoot him. He's on my side. I'd say, leave your grenades, leave your clips, and leave your weapon, and go somewhere. I'll do better with this than you. You know when that first Gulf War happened? One of the funniest interviews, I'm sorry, I see humor where other people don't. But they were interviewing this 19-year-old kid in the Army who is about to be shipped to Iraq to go into the war zone. And there he stands, he's got this helmet about two sizes too big. He's a little scrawny guy, you know. And he says this, he says, I didn't join the Army to fight. I just wanted to get my college paid for. And I thought, and you will if you live through this. Hey guys, if you don't, you're going to tell me there's nobody you want to hurt? I don't believe that. The problem is that most people that a Christian wants to hurt is another Christian. You know, you ought to do something that just upsets a lost person that lives for the devil. Oh, well, I don't want to put him in hell. I didn't say shoot him in the head. I said, I saw this guy one time. I'm in a truck stop. My wife are on the road. And this kid came in. You know, there used to be a time when people were at least discreet about their evil. And this guy's got a T-shirt on the back of it. It says Led Zeppelin. Live and uncensored, the most foul word you can say in public. And he's got it written on the back of his shirt so everybody in this, these little kids can see this, see it on the back. Now, I know what I'm going to do. And I can't say that it's of God. So here's what I tell God. This is the way I look at things. I said, God, the entire world belongs to you. Except for one square foot. I said, the whole world is yours, except for 12 inches right in front of me. Even what I'm on his property. My property is one square foot in front of me. And I said, you know what I'm going to say to this guy. And I don't know that it's of you. So I want you to know that I am not going to say anything to him as long as he's on your property. But if he gets on that property of mine, he's mine. And so, honest, I got my burger and I watched him. He came through the line. I'm kind of like, he's going to sit right there, you know? And he came and he walked clear to the other side of the truck stop. And I said, okay, Lord, okay. I know what you did. You got him away. So they had one of those condiment bars where you can pick up tomatoes and lettuce and squid and whatever else you put on your burger. And there's this, one of those big guys, you know, the human overcast type guy. And when he was done, there was nothing on the condiment bar left anyway. But anyway, this guy is standing in front of me. And he steps aside, and I didn't move, but he steps aside, and the guy in front of him took a step back right there. And I mean, right here, I can touch him. I'm reading Led Zeppelin, live and uncensored. I checked the property line. He's on my property. He's mine. I leaned over and said, hey, buddy. I said, that is a pretty stupid shirt, and it takes a stupid person to wear that in public. You say, that's no way to witness. What made you think I was witnessing to him? I wasn't trying to witness to him. I was trying to get him to think. So what were you trying to get him to think? What I was trying to get him to think is the next time he, if he dresses himself, the next time he gets dressed, he picks up that T-shirt and looks at it and goes, I think I'll wear my Chevy shirt. Yeah. I mean, you have got to stop wickedness at some point. And you know this, all Americans have a minor in constitutional law.
Well, it's a free country and I have free speech and I can write anything I want.
I said, stupid. I didn't say you didn't have the right to wear it. I said it's a stupid shirt and it takes a stupid person to wear it in public.
Well, I have a right to wear it.
And off you went. You say, that wasn't nice. I wasn't trying to be nice. He's in the devil's army. Guys, I don't attack people if I don't like the way they look. I don't like guys with long hair and bottle caps in their ears and fishing lures in their noses, but I don't say anything to them because they just might be lost and need something. But when I know they're out there doing something for the devil, I want to ruin their day. I do. Who are you trying to upset? You trying to upset an abortion clinic? I'm not saying go burn an abortion clinic. Anyway. Always got to be an enemy somewhere, guys. Got to be an enemy somewhere. Let me ask you this. If you're in the military, if you're in the Lord's Army, who do you support? I don't know how this equation works for other militaries. I just want you to know that we got the best military in the world, in history, ever, anywhere. And but the equation is this. Out of every 10 people in any branch of the service, only one of them is in combat. The other 9 support the one combat. Now, if you just said, yeah, that's a whole problem. They've just got two. Whoa, watch your mouth. I mean, you guys, you're the people that pay $5 for a cup of coffee. Okay? Give this guy a break. You know, I'm going to tell you one theory of Christianity I do not subscribe to. I don't believe that everybody has to be a door knocker. I really don't. I was talking to a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps one time, and I asked him a question. I said, as an officer, he started as a second lieutenant, then a lieutenant, then a captain, then a major, then a lieutenant colonel, then a colonel, and then a brigadier general, major general, lieutenant general, and 4-star. And I said, and by the way, don't repeat that stupid thing people say about our officers lead from the rear. Our officers don't. Our officers, ours and the Jews, are usually the first combat. Our officers, because they lead their men into battle. But at some point, as you go up in a military career, you just got to get someplace where you don't lead troops into battle anymore. And I asked this guy, he said, at what point, what is the last officer rank that you still lead men into combat where you could get shot and killed? He said, Colonel. I was amazed. Really, until you're a general officer, you're leading combat troops. Oh, yeah. Whoa. A general isn't leading 200 men. He's maneuvering 100,000 of them. He can't lead them all into battle. I don't know if you know about Norman Schwarzkopf, but that was the mastermind that won the first Gulf War. And if you saw him, he was overweight, out of shape, and I don't know if he could have passed Army boot camp physical. And some punk reporter got on him during a news interview, and he got mad. He said, you ever been in the minefield? They asked her, he said, have you ever been in the minefield? You know why I asked that question? Because when he was lean and mean in U.S. Army in Vietnam, he was leading his troops, and they walked through a minefield. One guy got blown up. He said, I had to lead my men. He had about 3 guys hit mines. And he said that he walked back in there and one by one carried every one of those wounded soldiers out of that minefield. But there comes a, by the time he was leading the Gulf War, he couldn't lead troops into battle. We needed his intelligence. We didn't need one more guy to pull a trigger. So I'm going to say this. Now, I do believe this. I believe there's no excuse for any of you not have gospel tracts on you. And if you say, well, I'm afraid to pass them out, then put them someplace where somebody can find them. I'm not going to call you a coward. I'm just going to call you useless if you don't carry tracts. But because you can't pass them out. You can't put them out in any place. And so I believe you ought to do that. I believe you ought to go to visitation. But if you say, well, you know what? I'm just not good at talking to people. Okay? Then support somebody that is. I'm sure you have missionaries come in here. Man, I don't want to go to some of these places where these missionaries go. Brother, I preached in places I went all week without running water. I go there. I was telling your pastor, I went one place, man, I'm leaving, and this guy's pulling a little one-eyed New Guinean who doesn't even know what a bath is. I mean, you can smell him from when he comes through that door back there. And I'm about to leave, and he wanted me to give me a gift. And he takes this wool hat off, and he's grinning, and he pulls it down over my head. And I can feel them burrowing in as he puts it on. And I said, I thank you. My dermatologist thanks you. The Center for Disease Control thanks you. They're probably going to put me in a room and feed me pizza, toast, and pancakes for the rest of my life. You say, why those? Will that get you better? No, that's the only three things they can think of they can shove under the door to me. That's how would you like to be in battle and get wounded and call for a corpsman or a medic and they go, oh, we don't have them anymore? We give them all rifles and told them to go into battle. Well, hey, man, it's time to eat. What are we going to eat? Oh, we don't have cooks anymore. We don't have a mess hall anymore. Everybody's in battle. Well, the Hummer broke down. Well, you have to fix it because we don't have mechanics anymore. I don't know if you know this. You ever heard that, you know, it's a classy thing. Again, it's one of those things people say and they act like they just made it up. About paratroopers, it's a crazy man that would jump out of a perfectly good airplane. Oh, no, no. It's a crazy man who would jump out of a perfectly good airplane with a chute that somebody else packed. I mean, when you jump out of an airplane, doesn't your life depend on that parachute? Who do you trust more than you? I mean, these guys jump out of a plane and they didn't even pack the chute. I always think this. They should be the easiest people in the world to lead to Christ. You talk about faith. If you can jump out of an airplane with a chute somebody else packed, trusting Jesus is nothing. Hey, guys, I'll bet they're glad somebody packs a chute. I'll bet you them special forces. I got a special forces guy. He's in our church. And I have been praying for him every day, him and his crew, probably for 30 years. 30 years. Oh, about 3 months ago, we got an email from him. He said, pray for the family of one of my friends. He got killed in a training accident. You know what training accident means? That means he got killed on some clandestine mission, and they never tell you that, so they say he got killed in a training accident. And I pray for that guy all the time. I really do. Guys, what I'm telling you is, somebody has to support the troops that are in battle. That's why I told you. When somebody comes in here, missionary, fill their tank with gas. Give them a restaurant card where they can go out to eat. Say, here, go take your wife out and just have a nice night. Do something for them, all right? Support them. I had this youth department, and I would always teach my guys to take care of each other. And one night, one of my young men came, and I think he won two guys to the Lord that night. And he said, and this guy was always there. He's one of those guys that's always there. They're just, if he's half dead, the half that's alive is going to drag the half dead part to visitation. And he said, you know, I almost didn't come tonight. Well, for him to say that, I mean, you have to hold a gun on him. I said, why not? He said, well, I got no gas in my car. He said, I only had $2. Now, that was back when you could buy about 4 gallons of gas with $2. And he said, that $2 is enough money to get me to my job tomorrow and back home, or to use up on visitation. So I almost didn't come tonight so I'd have gas to get to work tomorrow. But I decided instead I would put it in the car tonight so I could go on visitation. So I didn't say anything. I just pulled up my wallet. I'm going to give him $20. I pulled up my wallet. He goes, oh, no, you don't have to. I said, why? He said, the other guys already took an offering. They filled my tank up. That's the way it ought to be. That's the way it ought to be, guys. You ought to support somebody. Let me think about Moses and the Israeli army in the book of Exodus. Like when they're fighting the Amalekites. Now you understand these guys fought with a sword. You are an arm's length away from a guy that wants to kill you, and you may kill him, and just when you think, wow, I killed him before he killed me, you get a sword from another enemy in your back. I mean, you see these guys with these swords. You know what that guy's got to have? Two things. He's got to have a good grip. He doesn't dare drop that sword. He's got to have a strong wrist. I think that wrist can't give when that sword gets hit. Now, would you really want to go down there where you may drop your sword and have to strangle your enemy to death and watch him gurgle and die in front of you? Oh, no, I wouldn't want to be that. Okay. Well, then you could be Moses. Where every decision you made is micromanaged by everybody in, you take too much upon you, Moses. Where the people are lying, the people are not listening to him, they're making false gods, and it made him so mad that he couldn't even get into the promised land when he's promised to go. So which one of those would you like? You say, well, I really don't want to be that guy in the trenches, but I don't want the responsibility of Moses. Well, there is one more. Exodus 17. Aaron and Hur. You know what they did? I don't say this a lot, but it's the only way I can describe it. I have a worldwide ministry. I do. It's known around the world. I go around the world. I go into places, people know me. I have no idea why they know me, because I've never stolen anything from them. And, but I'm a member of a church. My pastor, our church is 1,000 people. It is 175 people when my pastor took it 33 years ago. He has himself been fighting leukemia for 18 years. He is some man. And when I go in that church, I am a member. And every Saturday, now because we've been trying to get this house ready to move into, we haven't been able to, but when that house is done, every Saturday, my wife and I go making calls for our pastor. My pastor and I were going to go to a meeting, and we were flying together, and a lady in the church, well, the secretary said, I don't think you two want to be in the same plane. And I said, if our plane goes down, this church only loses one man, him. That's my pastor. Do you understand? And you know, you say, well, why do you do that? Because I don't want to be him. I don't want to pastor 1,000 people. So you know what I do? All I want to do is anything I can do to make his job a little easier. Don't do that for your pastor. Really, think of something that would be easier. If my pastor's going to go on vacation, my wife and I give him some money, say, here, that'll help you go on vacation. I hope you get rested. You say, why? I am a soldier outside my church. Inside my church, I am a support troop. I was at a church. You see them a lot now. You know, some of these guys, they came home from Vietnam, they burned their uniform, they were so tired of it. But those guys do that when they're 20, 21 years old. By the time they're 71, they want people to know they served. You'll see the baseball hat says Vietnam vet, or the ship they served on, or whatever. And I was at this church, and we're sitting at it. We all went out to a restaurant. Sitting right here next to me is a white-haired guy. He's got a baseball hat on, says Vietnam veteran. And I appreciate him. I said you're a Vietnam veteran. I said what branch of service? He said Air Force. Man, I had a guy in my church was Air Force Vietnam. He was the one putting the bombs on the B-52s. And I said, when I said, are you a vet? Yeah. So what service are you serving? Air Force. And I mean, you could just see the steel back in that guy. And then I asked him a fateful question. I wouldn't mean anything by it. I said, so what'd you do in the Air Force? And he went like this. He went, I was a clerk. I said, I don't care what you were, pal. You did more for this country militarily than I ever have. Some of you guys are in the military. I don't care what you say, you ought to thank God for a clerk. Thank God for somebody that fixes the vehicles. Thank God for somebody that fixes the planes. Thank God for somebody that fixes the meals. Thank God for somebody that fixes you. And if you're not going to go get engaged in war for the Lord, you say you're in the military, but you're not going to go, you don't want to go out, well, I just don't want to go door to door and argue with people. Then support somebody that's going to go to door and argue with people. Support somebody that's going to be in the military, somebody that's going to go to the battle. You understand? So if you're in the military, if you're in the Lord's army, and you're not in combat, okay. I'm not even going to tell you you're a coward for not being in combat, because I don't think those 9 support troops are cowards. But who are you supporting? Here's another one. This one shouldn't be too hard of a question for you. What's your theater of operation? Say, what is that? That means, where are you serving? World War II was real easy. There was two theaters. There was the European theater and there was the Pacific theater. My dad was in the 5th Air Force. It doesn't even exist anymore. It was the Pacific Air Force. My dad was in New Guinea. I flew into WEWAC to preach. And a lot of the World War II airfields became the big airport. And the missionary picked me up and I said, is this airport, is that the old World War II airport? He goes, no. He said, but we'll drive right past the old World War II airstrip on the way to the mission station. And so we're driving, and up on top of this hill, all of a sudden a very unnaturally flat place with grass about this high, just a big, flat, long field with grass that high. He said, that right there is the airstrip that was here in World War II. I said, my dad built that. My dad got drafted when he was 33. He already had a crippled hand. That's how desperate they were. Hey, guys, I'm sorry. I'm not keen on this tour of duty one-year stuff. How on earth did we fight two countries at one time and end a world war in 4 years and we can't beat a bunch of camel jockeys in 20? You say, oh, it's the Army. It's a No. Here's what America does. They want to go over there, just kill everybody, and go home and watch the rest of the football game. And if you turn the American military man loose, he'd be home in a year. But you leave him be there for a year, and all he's thinking about is 2 more weeks and I'm going home. I'm getting out of here. They don't think that way. When my dad got drafted into World War II, you know what his military contract said? For 1 year or the duration. Now that meant that the day after he was drafted, if the war ended, they're going to keep him for a year. But if that war went, I don't know if you know this, but they thought the World War II was going to go to 1950. They were planning. That's right. You may hear about, well, they built some great big military base and then never used it for World War II. That's because they were planning to be in action for 1950. Those two bombs over Japan saved millions of lives on both sides. My dad got drafted in 1941. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's when the war started. And he was in. He was drafted into the Army. They put him in the Army Air Corps. And he was there until 1945 when it was over. My son, our oldest son that was in the Marine Corps, went to Naha, the Marine base, the base over there in Okinawa. I told my son when he got over there, I said, hey, John, I said, your grandfather built that during World War II. That's what they called it Red Horse. In the Navy, they called it Seabees. These were the guys that put them in, they built them. But guys, what's your theater of operation? My dad's theater of operation was the Pacific. Well, I know yours. Don't you think maybe it's this area? You know what you ought to do? You ought to be determined that the devil's not getting any ground here. You really can't do anything about California. You can't do anything about New York. Can't you do something out here? You know, when I pastored in Auburn, New York, 10 miles to the east was Seneca Falls. Seneca Falls had the Seneca Falls Army Depot. That was the clearinghouse for all nuclear weapons that went into Europe. And one day, it was in our Auburn paper, or the Syracuse paper, they said, there was a bunch of women. They were witches and lesbians. You say, you call them names? No. That's what they said in the newspaper interview. They said, we are witches and lesbians. And they bought a house down in Seneca Falls, called it the Women's Peace Encampment for Peace, or the Women's Encampment for Peace and Justice. And they said, on Monday, United Nations Day, which also happened to be Mother-in-Law's Day. That should tell you something about it. Anyway, they said, we are going to climb the fence into the Army Depot. We're going to have civil disobedience. This is going to happen on Monday. But on Saturday, their buses are going to leave from Auburn High School, and we're going to have classes on civil disobedience. Then on Sunday, at a Presbyterian church in Seneca Falls, we're going to have a ecumenical service in this Presbyterian church. And then Monday, we're climbing to the Army Depot. And I get up and I told my people this. I said, now, let me just tell you something. I went to Pensacola Bible Institute. That was Dr. Ruckman's, and I know you think that he was horrible. But here's what he said one time. He said, there's some guy out there pastoring 15 people. And he gets told all the time that he's a failure because all he's ever got is 15 people. And he said, well, and he's always ever going to have 15 people. And he said, what some people don't realize that guy and his 15 people are the only thing between that community and hell itself. You are the salt here. Do you understand? I didn't say you're the salt for Indianapolis. I said you're the salt here. And I told my people, I said, look, you can break the law. You can't stop somebody from breaking the law. Somebody breaks into a house and I can't do anything about it. But I said, you're not going to advertise in the paper that you're going to break the law. And you're not going to advertise you're having classes and break the law. I said, we're the salt. And I said, we're going to be there Saturday. We're going to be there Sunday. We're going to be there Monday. And we're going to try to ruin their day. And I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do the dirtiest thing we can. See, they're anti-nuke. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to be pro-nuke. Oh, no. Because they want us to be pro-nuke because they want to argue nukes. I said, we're going to do the rottenest thing we can. We're going to go preach the gospel. So we went out Saturday to Auburn High School. And I thought, well, where are all the guys going to come? Here's how this works. Get there half hour early and just park. And they'll show up. They'll there's a car parked there. So I had about half a dozen cars, my people. And I had these signs made up. Some of them said, it's appointed unto man who wants to die, but after this is judgment. That's so good it ought to be in the Bible. And some of them said, hell, a fate worse than nuclear war. One of them said, worry about your soul, not your skin. So we had a bunch of them. And we're standing there waiting for people to come. And I can still remember this hippie, you know, matted hair, seedy looking, pimple faced granola came up. And he goes, hey man, is it time? I said, no, it's not time yet. So when everybody got there, I specifically found this guy. I said, come to my truck. I said, it's time. I climbed up in my truck and I made him stand. He didn't know. And I said, here, pass these out. And this hippie's taking my signs and my guys are going, oh, thank you very much. And buddy, they started standing with those signs. I started preaching the gospel on the back of that truck. I never saw so many people gravitate to the school buses watching them check the windshield wipers. Now, he didn't want to stand around. On Sunday, we showed up at the Presbyterian Church. Boy, you know there's something sad when the gospel is preached on the steps of the church because it's not welcome inside the church. But I didn't tell you this. They had a rent-a-monk. And a rent-a-monk is they go hire a Buddhist priest. And he runs around in this little orange robe. And for about 6 months, this guy had been walking between Auburn and Seneca Falls with this little drum. You'd see him, he'd be going like this. Boom, boom, boom. That's all he do. A lot of talent. And I'm standing on the steps. And I'm looking out here. Now, there's three crowds here. There's the no-nukers and the pro-nukers. The right wing, let's kill the other guys. And there's us. And we're witness to both of them. We won two guys to the Lord that day. So I'm standing on these steps of this Presbyterian church. I'm just looking at my guys. And all of a sudden, I hear it. Boom. Boom. And he's coming. And you know he's coming. And you know what I want to do. I want to knock him back down the steps. And I can't do that. So he gets down there and he's starting up the steps. He's coming straight to me. And he's going to say, you know, why can't you want the peace? We want peace. And I said, Lord, I said, I can't handle this. I said, I don't know what to do. What should I do? I said, okay, I can do that. Totally unrehearsed. My men didn't know what was coming. I didn't know what was coming. But as this guy's about 12 feet away from me, I went, what can wash away my sins? And stop. And I see all my guys, and the heads came up to me. And in unison, they all went, nothing but the blood of Jesus. What can make me whole again? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. Oh, precious is the flow. This guy turned around. Boom, 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 boom. Man, he didn't stop till he got back to China. The next day, we went to the Army Depot. We had another one saved there. And we came up, and it's the funniest thing, because I had an evangelist in for my church. He was he had his own plane, but he was VFR. He wasn't IFR. He wasn't instrument rated. And after the meeting was over on Friday, it kind of got foggy and he couldn't fly out. So he was with us. So Sunday we go to the Army Depot and we're just going to all the gates and we're preaching. And we go to the main gate. And I mean, literally, the newspaper people would put their camera lenses right here in my face. trying to intimidate me. Yeah, I really get intimidated easy. And after a while, they were climbing a fence to get away from us. There was a lady from the TV station in Rochester, New York, and she comes up to me and she said, Reverend, she said, I'm from the such station in Rochester, New York. We're going to go on air in 5 seconds. Tell us why you're here, and no rhetoric. Oh man, I gave her so much rhetoric. She said, now we have Reverend Gibb from Freedom Baptist Church in Auburn, New York, and he's here as a counter-protester, his people are, to the anti-nuke people. Why are you here, Reverend? I said, we're not really counter-protesters. I said, I'm a preacher, and I said, we like to preach to sinners. And not many people will admit they're a sinner. And when I saw in the paper that they were saying they're going to break the law, I knew I'd find sinners here. So we came over here to give me the gospel. Oh, man, I mean, she wanted to kill me, but I had the rhetoric. You said you make her mad? I hope I did. But here's the thing. We are standing, right behind us is a line of New York State troopers. Then there's us, and then there's the no-nukers. And we preach the gospel. I'm telling you, man, they were climbing to get, they weren't trying to get into the Army Depot. They wanted to get away from us. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Done. It's over. Well, it just so happened that my evangelist, his plane was at the airfield in Seneca Falls. So we went there the next day, Tuesday, to see how things were. And we're standing in a airport office that isn't as large. It's an old trailer. It's barely bigger than this platform. And we're standing there, and some young 30-something guy walks out, takes 2 steps in the room, looks over, sees me, goes, you. He said, you were at the Army Depot yesterday. I said, yeah, how did you know? He said, preacher, I'm a New York State trooper. You were standing right in front of me. Now, you know what we thought? They're here to protect us. You know what they thought? We were here to protect them. He said this. He said, we were so glad you were there. He said, until you got there, they were in our faces saying, why don't you join us and quit being part of the machine? And he said, when you guys came, he said, you were kind of a buffer to us, man. He said, we were so glad you were there. Well, then I made the right party happy and the right party unhappy. You say, why? Because I'm a soldier. And I knew what my theater was. So what's your theater of operation? I got just 4 more of these, 10 more of these, 12 more. Anyway, let me ask you this. And this is why we're not winning anymore. What is your military objective? You know, we never tried to win in Korea, and we didn't. We never tried to win in Vietnam, and we didn't. And we've never tried to win in the Middle East, and we're not. But we tried to win World War II, and we pounded them. So what? Here's what I'm saying. When you say, what do you mean by military objective? Okay, it's like this. You're going to die, aren't you? All right? When you die tomorrow. What's the sum total of your life? What do you want to be? What do you want when everything you've ever done of value for the Lord? I mean, think of what you say. Well, I love the Lord. Okay, you love the Lord, and you call yourself a soldier. I'm asking, what have you done for him? What have you actively done for him? And if you die tomorrow, the sum total of everything you've ever done for God, that's your objective. What are you shooting for? You know, I've only got two. That's a lot. You know what they are? I want every man, woman, and child. I didn't say saved. I said saved or lost. I want every man, woman, and child on this earth worshiping the God of the Bible. You say, well, what if they're lost and they do that? The world will still be a better place. Your children will be safe. Right? Do you ever stop and think about this? Let me ask you a question. If everybody in this country lives by the Ten Commandments, are they going to go to heaven? No. But we'd have to lay off a lot of police officers, wouldn't we? I mean, you wouldn't have to lock your house anymore. I mean, if lost people all just feared the God of this Bible, this country did better when the lost people feared this God. So my first goal is, behind me, everything that I've left behind me, I want every man, woman, and child, as much as I can, I want them worshiping the God of this Bible, and I want them to have the right book, King James Bible. That's it. I don't have anything else. That's a lot. But I want I want my life to be more than the sum total of the groceries I have consumed. Right. There are people that literally all they do is turn oxygen into air, to CO2, and food into fertilizer.
Right.
And that's all they can do.
Right.
So, okay, so you die tomorrow. Look right now at your life, what you've done for God, and say, well, that'll stand. Some of you can't even see anything. You can't say, well, I haven't done anything. Okay. Let me ask you this. If you're in the military, what does your service cost you? Cost everybody something. Oh, no, because, you know, if a man's got a job and he goes to the military and goes to war, they got to give him the job back when he comes back. That's a great theory. I know it doesn't work. I told you I was a computer programmer, went to college for it. You know, if you get out of that field for 6 months, you're out. You're out. And that year-long deployment, brother, you're cooked. And there are guys, they have gone over there, and they came back with less one arm, less one leg. I just read a book. You want to read a book? It's called, I can't remember the name of it. And it's about one of only five living quadruple amputees. Guy was from Maine. Tough as they come. Book called Tough as They Come. The guy stepped on an IED and they had to take both of his arms and both of his legs off. And he drives a car today and runs in marathons because of the prosthesis and all. You understand? There's a guy who died the other day. He got shot in the head 10 years ago when he was trying to find the traitor Bo Bergdahl. I saw that guy. He was a Marine. I saw him in a wheelchair. He didn't even know he was back. You understand? People go into our military, it costs them something. I don't care if they walk back with a perfectly good body. I'm telling you, it cost them something. They didn't see their kids. They didn't see their kids raised. My dad, man, he would come home for a while, but my sister was like 2 years old first time he ever saw her. She didn't know who he was. She didn't want to go to him. He was a stranger. My sister didn't know there was the other half of a family. Because my dad was halfway around the world trying to kill Japanese. So what's it cost you? 33 years ago, I'm a body man. I used to work on cars. 33 years ago, I had to sell every body tool I had. Man, it was the toughest things I ever did. 33 years ago, my wife turned her back on a house and hasn't had a house in 33 years. This house that we bought when we came into Auburn, or into Boise, I told her, I said, babe, I'm not even looking for a house. I said, here's my wife. If I like a house and she doesn't, she's not going to say anything. We'll just get it and then she'll live the rest of her life in a house she doesn't like. So I said, you are not spending the rest of your life in a house that you're just putting up with. I said, I'm not looking at a house. I'm a man. I can sleep in a garage. I've done it enough. Anyway, and so she found this house. And I told you, she got mad at me because I wouldn't say anything about it. I said, well, she goes, you like it? You aren't saying anything. I said, do you like it? She goes, yeah. I said, okay, I like it. I said, but I ain't going to say it until you do. Because if I'd have said I liked it and she didn't, we'd have still bought it. Man, that lady, and I'll tell you something else, that 33 years, not one time in 33 years did she ever complain. Not one time. Come on, you know who you complain to when you complain to nobody else? You complain to that person you're married to. In the privacy of your home. She never did it in privacy. She never said one time to me. She loved serving God. If it meant losing a house. 3 years ago, we went there. Our oldest grandchild was 13 years old. He's my son's, our preacher, the middle one. And him and his wife were going away, and we went and watched our grandchildren. Our oldest grandchild, 13 years old, that is the first time in our lives we watched our grandchildren. How many grandmothers would go for that one? Not even... Even be in the house and watch your grandchildren for a week. We'd hear that they were born, and then we'd see them when they're walking. It's going to cost you something, guys. I've always had a bad neck. She had a good back. But 20, 33 years, her back's all messed up. That road will kill you. It's cost her something. I'm going to say, hey, there's people, they paid a whole lot more. I'm just telling you, you're saying you're in the service, what's it cost you? Last one. Still in? I haven't been in the military, but I know this great truth. A lot of civilians don't understand this. In our military, I don't care what branch, there's two kinds of people in it. There's the guy that joins up, enlists, stays in for a term, and gets out. And that's not a bad thing. Men have come in for 4 years, and in that 4 years, won the Medal of Honor. In that 4 years, gave their life. And then there's the lifer. This guy gets in the military and says, why would anybody leave here? Why would they leave here? And the lifer doesn't understand the guy that gets in, serves, and gets out. They understand. Now look, if you got in and served and got out, there's nothing wrong with it. But that lifer don't understand it. The guy that gets in, gets out, goes, why would you want to stay here? I had somebody told me this statistic. They didn't understand it. I figured it out that fast. People may go to church for 25 years, but in that 25 years, the average service life of a Christian over that 25-year span is about 5 years. They'll serve God for a year, teach in Sunday school, then they'll get away. Not leave church, but they won't be doing that. And then they'll maybe run a bus route for 6 months, and then come back, and then they'll have RU for a year. And over 25 years, they only really serve God for 5 years. And this guy says, I don't understand that. I said, I do. He said, you do? I said, yeah. I said, that's about one enlistment. Sign up, serve 5 years, get out. I got to tell you something, guys. This thing here, I'm a lifer. I told you don't have to all be in combat. I just can't understand why you're not all in combat. I got sense enough to know you can't all be in combat, but I still don't understand why you're not. I don't understand why everybody is saying, God, I want to be in the service. I don't understand it. I gave my life. I joined up. I get people all the time. I'll be 70 next year, and I get people all the time saying, when are you going to retire? I said, I don't know. I said, I'm booked to 2028, and I said, as long as I feel, I would like to just stay home. Do you know the truth? I would like to stay home. But I just can't do that. And I understand it. And so what I'm saying is, are you still in? Some guys are still in, but they're AWOL.
Right.
You AWOL? Am I talking to somebody? You said, preacher, you said, I should remember when I joined up. I remember when I joined up. I can remember that day. Okay. So when did you get out? You ain't dead yet. When did you get out? Bible says there's no discharge in this war. I can't understand getting out. I really can't. My wife doesn't want to retire. People look at us and they can't understand us. I told you, I get back out of here. I leave here tomorrow. I'll teach tomorrow night. I'll teach 3 classes on Thursday. I'll fly back out Friday. I'll fly back in the next Friday at 10:30. Fly out the next day at 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. I come back on Wednesday, and that night starts our missions conference, and that goes until Sunday, and then I think I fly out at the end of the week. I get tired thinking of it. I'd go to a doctor one time because I got a respiratory problem. This lady doctor, she said, well, so where you been the last month? I said, let's see, the last month I've been in the Bahamas, or no, St. Lucia. I was preaching there, and Trinidad, and Alabama. And I gave her like, in 1 month, I've been like 6 different locations in 6 different geographical parts of the country. And she goes, that makes me tired hearing about it. Are you in? When did you join? Who's your enemy? Who are you supporting? What's your theater of operation? What's your military objective? What does your service cost you? Are you still in? I need to talk to these guys right here. I'm going to tell you something. And I've checked it out, and I get the same report from other preachers, especially evangelists, because we're in other churches. Somebody asked me, what's the difference between Christianity today and its 70s? And just let me tell you what it was, what a big difference. In the back in the 70s, you had these 18, 19-year-old girls, saved, loved God, just wanted to marry a preacher that they could serve God with. And on the other side, there were young men, 18, 19, 20, who just wanted to be warriors for God and just wanted to serve God. That's probably what you two are. That's what my wife and I was. And they got married, and they're serving God today. Those girls still exist. Today, I find young girls like that. And they just want to find a man they can serve God with. I can't find the men. Because you know what the young guys all want to be? They don't want to be soldiers for. I don't find young men saying, I want to be a warrior. They don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to offend the devil. It's not because they're afraid of him. They don't want it on their resume they ever upset anybody. They're not going to be a soldier for God. They're going to be an IT man for God. They're going to be a marketeer, an entrepreneur. They're going to be a great negotiator for God. They don't want to take a pastorate and take what it takes to pastor a church like this. They don't want the responsibility to have somebody get mad at them. They're going to make a video and put it on the internet and win the whole world. And I'm telling you, I am seeing girls, and it's not just this country, it is around this world. There are no young men for those young women. There are women, young girls that want to serve God with some man, and they can't find a young kid who wants to be a man of God, wants to be a soldier. I'll tell you this, and I'll be done. It's 1968. I told you the Vietnam War was at its peak. And some of you remember, it was the Ballad of the Green Berets. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. Oh, man. I had a buddy of mine. We graduated together from high school. He's like this. Like this. Red hair. Hands like hams. And he had a reputation for being a fighter. This guy was so tough. There were two brothers that terrorized our town. He went and whipped them both at the same time. His name was Bobby. Bobby was a bad dude. And during that Battle of the Green Berets, this will make some of you feel real old. You could go down to Woolworths. Yeah, they're going, "What's Woolworths?" Shut up. Anyway. Bobby went down to Woolworths and for a buck and a half bought a Green Beret. And buddy, he put it on, it looked good. I mean, big barrel-chested guy. Now, I'm from Massillon, Ohio. Guys, Massillon, Ohio is where pro football got its start. Our high school stadium seats 24,000 people. You ever hear Paul Brown? He was our high school coach. It's the Paul Brown Tiger Stadium. We had the first pro team in history. And they were undefeated for 7 or 8 years. Just somebody started the second pro football team. But anyway, I used to pick up guys like John R. Rice and these guys at the motel to come preach. And I'd say, and I'd know what they're going to do. I'd say, "I'm going to show you our high school football stadium." And they'd look at me like, "Kid, you think I never seen chain link fence and bleachers?" And I'd take it past this huge brick edifice. I'd say, "That's our high school stadium." So we're at a high school football game one Tuesday night, or one Friday night. Bobby's got that Green Beret. He looks good. He looks good. And sometime during halftime, we're under the stands, and Bobby just kind of goes through the crowd like this. He's got that Green Beret. And I'm back, you know, behind him, and over here, Bobby didn't see him. Over at a hot dog stand, there's a black guy, not as big as Bobby. And he's just, you can see, just, I see him, he's just getting his food, and he's standing, he looks back, and when he looks back and sees Bobby, he leaves everything at the counter, his food, his money, and he starts coming through the crowd like this. And he is pushing people out of his way. Bobby don't see him coming. And I thought, ooh, this is not going to be a regular Friday night. And this guy stepped right across Bobby's path. I mean, he's looking up at Bobby. And when he did, Bobby stopped. And I watched Bobby's face turn as red as his hair. And I watched those hands turn into those two fists that have pummeled so many guys. And I thought, oh, buddy, you're going to wish you never stopped Bobby tonight. And Bobby just, he is like this. And he is just about to take this guy apart. And that black guy said this. "You earned that." And I watched color drain back out of Bobby's face. And I watched his hands relax. He said, "No. Take it off. I earned mine." Lost $1.50, never saw on his head again. Don't worry. He joined the Army, served the 82nd Airborne in Vietnam. He did his part. But he never put that Green Beret on again. So what are you saying? I am saying that when you've paid the price to be a soldier, you don't appreciate somebody pretending to be a soldier. If you're saved, I'm glad you're saved. If you claim to love the Lord, if you don't, I'm not going to try to prove to you that you don't. Won't you go raising your hand saying you're a soldier for God if you can't even remember when you joined? Or you know that you joined, but you're not in anymore. Don't do that stolen valor thing. Tonight there are some missionaries. I know there's a guy over in, I think he's in Thailand, fighting Parkinson's. Really bad. We're talking about it. A missionary friend of mine in Romania, he's fighting it. I've had several of them coming home with them or their wives with cancer. I had a missionary I preached for. He was in New Guinea for 23 years. They jumped him one night, beat him up. One of them, the guy pulled a gun at him and pulled the trigger, and it went click. Next round shot. It was a revolver. Next round shot. Look, guys, some of us, all we're doing is practicing for the remote Olympics. That ain't nothing to be proud of. Whatever you think you're doing, I'm asking you tonight, this says a good soldier. Are you in? If you aren't in, you want to be in? We need men. We need some men that want to be soldiers. We don't need IT men. We don't need negotiators. You understand? We don't need a bunch of guys that are going to be videographers or whatever they are. We don't need somebody that's going to be, somebody from GQ magazine dressed for them. We need somebody to get in. You know, I get this question asked. I've been defending that King James Bible for almost 50 years. I have read horrendously boring stuff. I like the Brits, but Brits are boring. They'll put you to sleep reporting on a house fire. I say, it's on fire. I say, give me that microphone. I'm American. Oh, the flames are leaping into the air. Women are fainting. Babies are crying. We'll make a movie out of it. You know what's more boring than a Brit? A century-old Brit writing about Greek manuscripts. How about three occasions, 1871, 1,000 pages. Guys his age don't want to do that anymore. I get this all the time. Well, who's going to be defending the King James Bible when you die? I can't see anybody. Because this generation, I'm not getting on you guys, but that generation, if they can't get it off Wikipedia, they ain't going to learn it. Right. And they're sure not going to do something to make people hate them. I mean, you can't believe, I've had 16 people show up at my front door because I stood against that mid-tribulation rapture, and that guy sent 16 goons to my front door. And God was good to me. I wasn't there. 7 carloads. Oh, I couldn't take that. Well, then support. Now, I'm not talking about me, but then support somebody that's in the battle. Or join up. Or re-up. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. You say you're a soldier? Think right now. Think right now. Answer this question. When did you join? Who's your enemy? Who are you supporting? What's your theater of operation? What's your military objective? What does your service cost you? You still active? You still in? Man, I serve with some good men. Your pastor's a good man. I'm honored to serve in the same military with him. Are you in? You want to be in? I'm telling you, I wouldn't trade this life for the life of a drunk, because that's what I was, and I thought I was living. Man, I was dying. I'm living now. Father, I'm sorry, God, if I've kept these people so long. I don't mean to try them, to try their patience, make them go home late. I thank you, God, for the honor to be able to speak to them. The pastor would have me come, that I'd get to preach to him. But I'm not a performer, Father. I'm not here so they can say they like something about me. If this meeting in some way has altered their life for you, then it's been a successful meeting. And I pray tonight for these people. They're not bad people. They're pretty good folks, God. Come to church on a Monday, Tuesday night. But Lord,
who's in your service. Don't let them say they're a soldier for you if they've never joined or they got out and haven't been serving anymore. God, I pray for the young men in this room. Help them to get their mind off of this techies for God. I can't find anybody in that group that wants to be a soldier. They don't want to be a warrior. You said you wanted a good soldier. You didn't say you wanted a good IT man. So I guess I'm praying for you tonight. I'm praying that you get somebody tonight, God. I'm praying somebody lays it on the line. I'm praying somebody joins up and stays in till they die. Because if they do, you'll get something for that. And the devil will hate the decision they make tonight. But it'd be powerless to do anything about it. Bless these people. I hope they bless you. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. With your heads bowed and eyes closed, the piano plays, you know what to do. Lord, I want in. Man, I remember. I still remember, brother. I was 21 years old. No, I was only 20. I remember still like it was yesterday at that, down at that altar, brother. You know what I said? I went in. I went in this battle. I went in this fight. I want to be on God's side. I was opposite of him for too many years. I want to be a soldier. I'm not an inventor. I'm not a genius. I'm not a great sports person. I just be a soldier for God. It's the least I owe him. Say, I want to join. I went in. You know why you're here? Because somewhere in your pastor's life, he said those words to God. I went in. And what you see in this church is a result of that decision.